And a very good day to you, Leo Laporte here. I am the tech guy. It's time to talk high tech, and I hope you'll do it with me at 8888-ASK-LEO. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's my number. 888-827-5536. We talk about everything having to do with technology, and that means, as I say all the time, doesn't just mean computers. It means cell phones. It means camcorders. It means the internet. It means MP3 players. It means home theater. We're going to talk with our gadget guru in just a little bit about gadgets, too. It's that, too. Yes, sirree. And the internet. We were talking last time about Facebook and MySpace. Actually, my daughter is very angry that I did not include her as an expert on this. She said, "You've got it all wrong." it was prompted by an interesting article in the Newsweek magazine by Stephen Levy, who is, I think, my favorite commentator on this stuff. And he's talking about research that basically says that it's a class differentiation between people who use Facebook and MySpace. You know about the two sites, right? Probably the hottest sites on the internet right now. MySpace has 70 million users, some of whom use it to promote their bands. Some of the users use it to socialize. Mostly, I think it's a way kids get together and socialize. Maybe not just kids, young adults, let's say. 70 million. Facebook is a little smaller, 28 million, but part of the reason it is because it only opened to the public in September of last year. It was only college kids at first, and maybe it's because it was college kids at first that Facebook, according to this researcher, tends more toward the preppy, the college-educated. One headline on a blog said, "MySpace is Bart, Facebook is Lisa." That's a pretty way, I think a pretty good way to describe it. My daughter said, "You got it all wrong." Now, she moved from MySpace to Facebook, and all her friends are on Facebook. She goes to a prep school. My son, who's a skater boy, is still on MySpace. He's a little younger. Maybe when he gets a little older, he'll be a Facebook kid. Which are you, Bart or Lisa, Facebook or MySpace? We could talk about that. 8888-ASK-LEO. I was talking with a friend about a kind of interesting item on ThinkGeek the other day. This kind of cracks me up. ThinkGeek is a wonderful website for geek paraphernalia. T-shirts that say things like, "I read your mail." And got root. Things like, you know, geek jokes. There are 10 kinds of people, those who understand binary and those who don't. That kind of geek joke. Well, it's also a great site for geek gadgets. And I was talking with Megan Maroney. We do a show for parenting, digital parenting. And it's a build-your-own game console kit. Now, this is an example of geekery. Absolutely. I love this. It is pieces, bits and pieces, basically, that you put together. I don't think there's any soldering involved exactly. I love the idea. It's $200. You don't do it to save money, but if you or your kids or both of you, and I think this would be a great project, wanted to learn how to make video games, it's 8-bit gaming. I mean, it's not, this isn't a PlayStation 3 you're building, not even a PlayStation 1. It's more like a Atari 2600 you're building. But it comes with everything you need. You put it together. It's got a power adapter, a mouse, a mini keyboard. Man, I wish we'd had this when I was a little younger. Now, it comes with some basic stuff, including the basic language. But you're expected to write your own games here. It has some example games, but it's really for you to put together this machine and then write your own games and make cartridges that you put on the game machine. I wonder how many they'll sell of these. It won't be to kids, probably, especially since it's $200. But I just think it's so cool. It's called the Hydra Console Game Development Kit. What a great idea! I really love that idea. Computer security problems at the IRS. People are probably cheering over this one. Yeah, you know, the federal government has more trouble with its security. The Government Accounting Office audits the security of these systems, and a great number of federal systems are insecure and have been hacked. Get this one. They did test calls. The Treasury Inspector General for the Tax Administration, they do oversight of the IRS, did test calls, the kinds of calls hackers do. They call this social engineering. You know, I think a lot of people think a hacker is that stereotype you see in the movies where they sit down at the computer and they guess passwords. No, actually, the best hacking, the most successful hacking, is usually something called social engineering. This is an example. The hacker called IRS employees. And some of them, by the way, were managers and a contractor, and requested that the employee give the caller his username and temporarily change the password to one the caller suggested. According to this report, 61 of the 102 people who were test called complied. They said, oh yeah, here's my name, here's my login. What do you want my password to be? Only 8 of the 102 contacted security or validated the legitimacy of the caller. I'm sure they don't say what the caller said, but I imagine it was something like, yeah, I'm calling from the Treasury Inspector General Office for Tax Administration. We're doing a little security audit. I'd like you to help me out here. Oh, yes, of course. We need you to change your password briefly here. Now, this is exactly what a hacker would do. I've talked many times to hackers like Kevin Mitnick, Kevin Polson, Adrian Lamo. These are guys who are very adept, and most of them have used social engineering. In fact, I think all of them have used social engineering like this to get your password, to get your information. And isn't that what these phishing scams are, these emails? They're not phone calls, but they're similar. They say, oh, this is your bank, and you better quickly log in and change your password because it's been compromised. And how many people click on that? Actually, it's quite a few, according to a recent study. As many as 1 million Americans were tricked by these fake emails this year. 1 million. It's very scary. My wife the other day got a phone call from somebody claiming to be from a charity, and I think they picked a very, you know, serious charity. One you'd really go, oh boy, I really want to contribute to that. And I heard her talking to the person, and I said, tell them not to call us. Please, this is the language you use. Please place us on your do not call list. And I had to explain to her that anybody who calls you, and I think Jennifer knew this, but just worth repeating to everybody listening, if anybody calls you from, you know, and hackers will, of course, pick a good, reliable charity, one you really want to contribute to, and asks for your credit card number, you say no. You send me some information or give me another way to do this. I'm not giving you my credit card number. But many, many people fall for this. How have you ever given your credit card number to a solicitor over the phone? I certainly hope not. Have you ever clicked a link in an email and filled out your password, your login, thinking you're on the bank's site? Looks like the bank's site. Looks like PayPal. Looks like eBay. Millions have. And apparently even trained people who should know better, people who are guarding our personal information, are falling for this too, the IRS. They get calls from, you know, just from somebody who says, yeah, I'm a tech support person. We need to test your system. And just without thinking about it, go, yeah, oh yeah, okay. IT's on the phone. What do you want? Yeah, yeah. They just want to get it over with. Yeah, here's the password. Yeah, whatever you need. Let's just get this going. I got work to do. Hackers know about this. They're very friendly. They're very effective. The big hacker conference is going on right now, you know, in Las Vegas. DEF CON, they call it. DEFCON. Hackers get together and talk about the tools of the trade, the tricks of the trade. It's not illegal for them to get together, although the feds are certainly there hanging out. I mentioned yesterday, so was Dateline NBC, only you don't try to trick a trickster. The Dateline NBC reporter was outed almost instantly and thrown out, quite embarrassingly. We'll start to get stories from DEF CON. In fact, I'm hoping I can get my friend Patrick Norton, who's there right now, to join us next week and talk about it. But here's one bit of information that came out on Friday in Las Vegas. Turns out these social networking sites like MySpace and Google are pretty easy to hack. They use cookies, little bits of information stored on your hard drive to keep track of your, you know, you notice you don't have to enter your password each time you go there, for instance. Well, a college kid named Rick Deacon, who is also a hacker, gave a presentation on stealing information from MySpace users' cookies enough to log into their system and take over their pages, hijack accounts, become someone else on MySpace. It's pretty easy. It really just relies on you once again being fooled, logging into or going to a rigged site, maybe an online forum or a bulletin board that just sucks that cookie off your drive because they're not encrypted and uses it. Deacon says, I've never seen it fail. I become you on MySpace. If you've ever had a MySpace account hijacked, you know the pain, and you may wonder how. Well, that's how. 8888 Ask Leo. That's my number. I'd love to talk about this or anything else. You let's talk about tech today. Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo is the number. 888-827-5536. By the way, KJ is telling me in the chat room, and I invite you to join us in the chat room. It's a really great way to participate in the show, and frankly, I get a lot of great ideas and information from the chat room. KJ is telling me that if you sign up for the Do Not Call registry, remember the Federal Trade Commission started that Do Not Call registry in 2002, it expires. It's a 5-year sign-up. Of course, I'm sure industry got that through. Because people will forget. So it expires. They will start expiring in September for those who signed up right away. I include myself in that. So that federal Do Not Call registry, which is designed and did seem to work a little bit anyway, to keep you from getting telephone solicitations during dinner or any other time. It's donotcall.gov, and you might want to sign up there again. But I am told that legally, if you say, please if somebody does call you for a solicitation, you say, please put me on your do not call list, they're required by law to take you off the list and to somehow flag that number so they stop calling you. I'm unlisted, and I think that blocks a lot of them. But I know people get, you know, 3 or 4 calls a night. Boy, that's frustrating. Starting to get spam on my cell phone now. Text spam. I thought that was against the law. That is, I mean, that's really bad because you're paying for it. Let's go to line 2. Tony's on the line from San Antonio, Texas, listening on the great WOAI. Hi, Tony.
Hey, Leo. How you doing?
How are you today?
Great, great, great. Just got a big problem.
Oh, why is it everybody calls me with the bad news? Somebody's going to call me with the good news sometime. All right, go ahead. What's your big, I'm just teasing. What's your big problem?
I deleted a folder in Windows Vista.
Oh, dear.
It's the folder where if you go to start menu, and it's a default folder, and it's under, it's my username. Folder name is Tony.
Oh, you deleted Tony? You deleted the whole thing?
Yes.
Did you empty the recycle bin?
Yeah.
What were you thinking, Tony? Were you mad? Were you angry?
It was actually done by accident. I didn't do it on purpose. Once I was actually copying over my user profile.
Oh, I see. And you thought
it backwards, and I.
Got it.
Copied over that whole folder.
Okay, now that's very different from what you told me. That's not the same thing as deleting it. You copied over it.
Yeah. That's exactly what I did. But the end result's the same. All the information is gone.
Yeah, the result's not the same.
No?
If you erased it, if you dragged it to the recycle bin and emptied the recycle bin, you could recover it. You've overwritten it, if you've copied data on top of that area, you cannot recover it.
At all.
So the reason you can recover erased data is because it's not really erased. Even if you empty the recycle bin, all that does is tell the operating system you can mark this area free. You can use it. You can use it for something else. It doesn't take the time to delete the data. It just marks the area as available. It's like the apartment's empty, but they didn't clean it out yet.
Yeah.
So until something comes and occupies that space, cleans it out, puts new furniture in there, your old furniture's still there. But if you copy stuff on top of the old space, it's gone. There's no way to recover. There's no magic formula for recovering it. So the real question is how much... The real question is how much of it did you overwrite? If what was the process? I mean, how exactly did you do this?
Well, I went to a third user ID, and I was copying the user profile from one user ID to this one.
Okay.
And that was my main one. My whole process was I wanted to...
So you created a new Tony.
My administrator account.
Yeah, I understand. You created a new Tony, and you had old Tony.
Yeah.
And then instead of dragging old Tony's contents to new Tony, you dragged new Tony's contents to old Tony.
Actually, I didn't drag it. There's a link where you can go on properties, and it says copy to.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
I think it's new to Vista. I'm not sure. I never...
The chances are some of that data is still there because the new Tony doesn't have as much data as old Tony, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So you've overwritten some, but probably not all. So now you need an unerase program, and you'll want to go through the drive. First of all, don't do anything more to the drive. Don't even install an unerase program because anything you write to the drive has the potential of overwriting data. So you just want to leave that drive the way it is. And, you know, when they're doing criminal investigations or forensics, or if you take it to a tech who knows what he's doing, the first thing they'll do is they'll make a bit-for-bit image copy of the whole drive. And they'll work on the image copy instead of the original. They don't want to modify the drive in any way.
Yeah.
So if you have Norton Ghost or a True Image or a Drive Snapshot or some program that'll allow you to copy that, it's not a bad idea. And you've got somewhere to copy it to. It's not a bad idea to make a copy of all that.
Yeah.
But most people don't have that up. By the way, sometimes the best way to do this is to bring it to a tech who has all the equipment and has all the software and can do this much more quickly. Then you're going to get an unerase program. I mean, I've used Active Unerase. There are a lot of unerase programs out there. Most of them, the way they work, and it's a little annoying, is they're free. You download them, you try them, and it says, oh, I can recover 99% of your files. That'll be $123. You know, they don't charge you until they get you, basically. I don't have one I recommend over the other. They're all about the same.
Yeah.
I wouldn't pay more for something because it's going to do a better job. It's not. It's the same idea. All of them do the same thing. They go through those directories and they look at what's wrong. You know, they look at what's been erased. You could tell, by the way, because the way the operating system erases it, it just changes the first letter of the file name. That's all. So it goes through and looks for that up. It looks like an upside down. He looks for that and says, oh, this has been erased. This has been erased. This has been erased. And gives you those files. And almost all of them will be able to recover it. But what I would be careful about is don't spend a lot of money. You know, let me get a list together. I don't know all of the different programs. Let me see if I can get a list together for you of the best programs. Hey, Morgan Webb, my old friend, coming up. Stay here. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
She's still getting that line there.
Unlimited local and long distance calling for less than $20 a month. Call 888-60-POWER. That's 888-60-POWER.
Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the number if you'd like to talk tech. 888-827-5536. A good point, XP99 in the chat room reminded me that, and I always forget about this feature in Vista. It's a really cool feature. You can go back to previous versions of files in Vista. It does it automatically. You don't have to have turned it on. And you can do it by just right-clicking a folder and selecting Restore Previous Versions, or go to the Properties and click the Previous Versions button. Now, I don't know. My question is, if you did what he did, our last caller did, what Tony did, if you erased the folder it was in, I don't know if these previous versions would work or not, but it's certainly worth checking. I always forget this feature. It's a very nice feature. I'm looking right now at my Documents folder, and I have versions of it going back to when I first installed, to May, when I first installed Vista. So that's a very handy feature. So right-click on your, what you'd probably do is right-click on the Tony folder. Oh, see, it doesn't give you that on the highest level. Maybe right-click on the Documents folder and see if you can restore a previous version. Click Restore Previous Versions. I'm not sure that'll work if you've done what you've done, but it's worth a try before you go crazy trying to fix things. My friend Morgan Webb worked with us. In fact, she started with Tech TV back in, I think, around 2000 as a researcher. Became very apparent that she was very talented. We started using her on the show. She got her own show, X-Play. She's still doing X-Play on the G4 Gaming Network. And I ran into her in the airport a couple of months ago. And I said, Morgan, you've got to get off mainstream TV. Or not get off, but add to your portfolio with some online stuff, because you'd be so good doing a podcast or a web TV show. And I guess she took my suggestions to heart, because she has started her own web TV show. I gave you the wrong address yesterday. I want to correct that. It's Web Alert. We had it right in the show notes, thanks to Shuby, but I gave her the wrong address. W-E-B-B, because that's Morgan Webb with two Bs. Her real name, by the way. Just a felicitous thing. And somebody named Morgan Webb really should have a web TV show. WEBBAlert.com. And she's done two shows so far, and I just think it's great. I'm very proud of her. So we're trying to get her on the phone. She's on vacation right now, and if we can, we will. We'll get her on. We'll ask her what she's up to. It's exciting. When I see all these amazing things that are being done on the internet, TV shows and radio shows, I'm just really impressed. It's a real opportunity. Jerry's on the line from Novato, California, listening on the great KGO in San Francisco. Hey, Jerry.
Hey, Leo. Thank you very much. And in spite of the fact that anyone can do a podcast, et cetera, you are an incredible broadcaster.
Thank you.
Everything you do is amazing. My question, I work with a lot of students in the area of environmental education. And what I want to do is an online live talk program.
There you go.
Primarily interviewing people.
There you go.
I've tested Skype and seen great improvements in the quality of the phone interview, and I know you've used TalkShoe and maybe Blog Talk Radio. So my question, I can get good quality on the people I'm interviewing, the phone, on the phone side, but I still sound like I'm on the phone as opposed
right.
to the way you sound
right.
On your stream.
Right.
What advice would you offer?
This, by the way, a great idea. When you talk to people, are you going to be taking calls like a talk show like this show, or are you
probably
going to be interviewing
not.
People?
So probably interviewing, and then the questions will come via chat.
Okay. So something like TalkShoe or Blog Talk is really designed for a call-in show like this, where you don't know who you're going to be talking to. You want to give anybody, you want to be able to give out a number and give anybody a chance to call in. Mm-hmm. So those you don't need those. Skype is fine. With Skype, and this is what we use for all of my, I call them netcasts, podcasts, is, just because I don't want you to think you have to use an iPod, so I call them netcasts,
mm-hmm.
Is I will set up, so we're going to do an interview, or we're going to do a show. I will set up a time, and we'll conference. You can have many people in a conference call on Skype. My experience is any more than three or four, the quality starts to go downhill, but
mm-hmm.
three or four at a time, just like a round table. That's how we do TWIT, the big round table tech news show I do every week. They're all on Skype. Now, how come I sound better? Because I'm using a mixer, and I'm using a real mic instead of Skype. And this is where you're going to spend some money on technology or equipment, I should say, really. And maybe that's something you do want to do or you don't, but it gets a little more expensive here.
Well, that I have. I mean,
okay.
I have a good quality.
You sound like a radio guy.
Yeah, I have a little bit of that, but
okay.
I have a better quality microphone. But the
good.
Question is, then if I don't use TalkShoe, how do you stream live? That's the
oh, you want to stream it? Oh, I
yes.
see. You don't.
Yes.
Okay, I misunderstood. So you do want to do
it. Listen live.
Yeah. Okay, I got it. So if you're using a microphone and a mixer, just to finish the thought, then you have good quality going into the mixer. So what I do is I feed instead of I record the output of the mixer. So I'll take the Skype output from my computer, feed that into the mixer, and then feed the mixer into another computer, which is or a recording machine, which is recording. So then I'm recording myself high quality and the Skype call as it is.
Got it.
So it's separate streams. Then you also, in order to make that work, and this is, I don't want to get too far into this because this even broadcast engineers go a little squirrely when I mention something called mix minus. You have to send your voice back to Skype, but without the Skype callers on it. So that's
mm-hmm.
what's called mix minus. It's the mix that you're saving to the recorder minus them.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, you have to find a way to get your voice out of the mixer separately back into the Skyping computer. That way, the mixers become your big microphone into Skype, your headset into Skype,
Got
But you're recording on a separate device. So that's how you get high quality voice. And by the way, I think it's true I learned this from talk radio. Even if the caller is on a phone, as you are right now, Jerry, if the host is on a full quality microphone, it sounds like a real show. People will tolerate it. Mm-hmm. It's when everybody sounds like on a phone that it brings somehow. Yeah. It just seems to. It's like you're listening to a phone call.
Mm-hmm.
Right now people are listening to a phone call. It's just that I'm on full quality mic, so it makes it sound like a radio show. That's right. All you need to do. Everybody else can be on the phone. It doesn't really matter.
And
now,
do you like talk show or blog talk radio?
Now here's how I would recommend. I would try streaming it. I have a new favorite. TalkShoe is great. TalkShoe is free at TalkShoe.com. Mm-hmm. It's designed really as much for a talk radio show, for incoming calls as it is outgoing calls. So it may be more overhead than you want. You know what I've been using, and I'm using it right now for the radio show, are streaming video sites, two of them, Stick'em and Ustream.
Mm.
Ustream.tv and Stick'em.com. Now, these are designed to stream video, but they'd stream audio very, very well. In fact, I know people listen, who are watching the video actually are watching sometimes just because they can hear the audio so well. So I think these do a very good job. The bandwidth is free. You could not send a video signal, or you could do what I'm doing. For instance, if you look right now on my Stick'em stream, I'm sending my desktop. So if you had things that you wanted to show people, you could show them your face, or you could show them your desktop, which is what I'm showing right now.
This has been great. And then that whole mix minus thing still,
whether you're
using Ustream or whatever, you still got to deal
still,
with that.
Still got to deal with that. Okay. So what eventually happens is you might be using two computers, one for streaming out the video and the audio, one for Skype, and then a recording unit. I use two computers. I record on one computer, send out Ustream on that same computer, and then I use Skype on the other computer. It's, you know what, I have a kind of a description of our setup at twit.tv. If you click the about box at twit.tv and how we record this show, it has somewhat of an explanation of how all this works.
Wonderful.
And that'll give you more details on that. Good luck. I think this is a great idea. And is it students that you're trying to reach?
Yeah. There are all these niches out there. And you look at students, if you reached 1,000 classrooms, you could reach 25,000 students.
Amazing. I mean, really amazing. Do you have a website yet?
Yes.
What is it?
It's earthnewsradio.org.
That's excellent.
And it's not operational in this context.
Morgan Webb is ready online too.
Where we're going, where it's all about science, the environment. In fact, we've done one of the first sky tours where you download the sky tour, go outside, we give you a personal tour of the nighttime sky.
Oh, neat. Look at this.
Thank you so much.
Hey, good luck, Jerry.
Thank you.
Yeah, bye-bye. I really appreciate it. That's so cool. It is hard to understand the mechanics of it all, I know. But once you wrap your head around it, it all kind of makes sense. Now, one thing I should point out about Stick'em, and especially if you're doing it with students, I would probably not use Stick'em because you'll hear from the parents. Stick'em's parent company is a Japanese pornography service. They're completely, I have to say, if you go to Stick'em.com, they're very clear. This is not an adult service. We don't want anything inappropriate. So Stick'em looks completely clean, but they will have seen the article. Some parents will have seen the articles in the New York Times and elsewhere linking Stick'em to a parent company that uses the same technology for porno. So some parents may say, oh, I'm not letting my kid use Stick'em, and I can understand that reaction. Ustream.tv works very well. I use both. I don't feel that it tarnishes Stick'em necessarily. Stick'em itself and the site itself is above board, so I'm not worried about that. But if you're at all worried, and if you're a teacher, you probably should be, Ustream.tv is probably a very good place to go. And I think they do a great job. We have right now 768 people watching the show on Ustream.tv and 737 people watching my desktop, which is even more thrilling, on Stick'em. And it's funny because the chat room will tell me each day, oh, switch. The video is smoother on Ustream now. So the site's... One of the reasons I use two different services is because we get so many viewers. We've had last week we had 2,000 viewers. And so these sites can really get bogged down. And sometimes some of them respond better than others. Right now I think we're at the max on both for some reason. Maybe somebody else is doing a big show or something at the same time. Remember, you're competing. Their bandwidth is shared with every show that's going on that show. Hey, we got Morgan Webb on the line. We're going to talk to her in just a little bit about her show. More of your calls, too. This is fun. 8888 Ask Leo. 8888-ASK-LEO or 888-827-5536 if you're having problems with your technology, if you'd like to know something, maybe understand a term, maybe start your own TV or radio show on the internet. It's funny because I think it was probably not very, maybe 6 months ago, somebody called up and said, I want to stream my wedding video. And I said, oh, you can't do it. You'd have to have so much bandwidth. It'd be so complicated. I mean, you could do it, but only a few people could watch it. And then along come these sites like Ustream. It's free. You can stream to thousands of people. The quality is excellent, both audio and video. It's kind of remarkable. This stuff moves so, so very quickly. 8888-ASK-LEO. Join us in the chat room, too. irc.dslextreme.com. 309 people in there right now. Our show notes are online at techguylabs.com. I'll put links to everything there. Techguylabs.com. Stay right here. I am Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Morgan Webb coming up. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's my number. 8888-ASK-LEO. I'd love to hear from you as we talk about this stuff that is changing the world. Talking about changing the world. Let's say hi right now to Morgan Webb, who is changing the world with their new show. Hey, Morgan, how you doing?
Hi, Leo. I'm doing great. How are you doing?
So great to talk to you.
You too. You know, I was really interested in your last caller, you know. When we were putting together, maybe we should explain, like I'm doing a daily video blog. It's at webalert.com with two B's because that's my last name. And putting it together, it was really difficult because there isn't a lot of really good step-by-step instructions on how to do a video blog on the internet.
That's so, right. So everybody kind of has to reinvent the wheel. It's too bad that...
A lot of steps that I took... You know, there's an answer and there's a simple answer, but it's really difficult to figure out. And there's a lot of trial and error involved.
Well, you got good looking video. Know. I mean, it really looks great. You've done
two
shows. I really liked the format. I think it was a very smart move. What's great is you talk about kind of the tech news of the day, but you show the pages where the stories are. You give them credit, which I think is really smart.
I mean, we all spend a lot of time reading blogs,
right. And
you got to give these guys credit. They spend a lot of time and a lot of work putting some of these really thoughtful analytical pieces together. And I'm not going to just read it to you. I mean, a little summary. And if somebody's interested in that particular story, then there's links for people to go and read more about it and get more in-depth analysis. Whereas if they're not particularly interested in maybe Google's new phones or... then they don't have to read any more about it. They can read more about one of the video game stories we're talking about.
Always 5 minutes long, so you just in 5 minutes you get basically everything that's going on. Morgan's really talented. Now, so tell me how you solved all of this. What are you using to shoot it? How are you shooting it?
So we tried a few cameras. We wanted, at first I'm thinking, hey, you know what sounds great? Let's record it straight to a hard drive, and then I don't have to... you know, use a videotape to kind of get it into the computer. I thought that was going to save me a lot of time.
Right.
But it turns out in the end, it didn't save me any time because I spent so much time trying to get special software and the software didn't work with this computer and then it didn't recognize the format.
Right.
And, you know, I returned several cameras because they just weren't working out. So I ended up with the Canon H20, which is an HD camera.
Everybody loves the HV20. It's such a great camera. I know Alex Lindsay has been using it. It's $1,000.
Really intuitive.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's $1,000. It's very intuitive. It does use tape, but actually, I'm recording straight into Final Cut Pro.
Right. You just put the FireWire into Final Cut, and it gets this feed, and you just have it in Final Cut. Did you look at programs like Wire?
You because you were like, right, of course, and this was all total news to me. So.
You should have called me. I've looked at all these different ways, and so has Alex Lindsay, and it's true. We really should put something out. Alex and I have done seminars on this. You just got this up so fast. You didn't get a chance to come to our seminar. We have a seminar called Gear Media Tech where we talk about all this. Did you look at a program called Wirecast that allows you to do three cameras and all of that?
No. You know, actually, I had thought about using different cameras, but I was trying to, since it's daily, I was really trying to
keep it simple.
Keep it simple.
And you're doing this all by yourself, too, I might add.
Yeah.
You don't have a camera operator. You don't have an editor. You're doing. Are you writing all of it and doing it all yourself?
You know, it's not. That's sort of how it's going right now. But it's honestly not sustainable because
you're exhausted, you know, and you still are doing X Play. We should say you're still doing a TV show every day.
I still do a TV show, so I shoot it in the evening, and then I, you know, bring it into Final Cut, and then I basically edit it. And I'm getting quicker and quicker because I wasn't really a big expert in Final Cut before this.
Right.
But still,
you're doing a great job.
I go out for dinner once in a while, and
you have a nice looking, a great looking website, WebAlert, webbalert.com, and then you're also doing it's on iTunes, and there's a feed so people can subscribe to it and get it automatically. Right.
Yeah, we also have an embed code on our website, so if people want to put sort of the latest video or that day's news on their website, they are welcome to do that. And
who's doing the? You embed the video on the site, so people can, and that's really probably for most people the simplest and easiest way.
Yeah.
Who are you using to host the video, to encode it? Is it a service? Is it something you're doing?
We're actually using a service called Castfire.
Okay, love them. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, they've been really great. They make it really... What is so great about Castfire for me has been their interface is extremely simple. Mm-hmm. I don't need to... They don't give you a whole bunch of options that you don't necessarily understand.
Right.
And what they are able to do is though I can, you know, during my cast in the middle, basically we've sort of done some like ad barter deals with some great blogs that I love to read. And we can kind of rotate the commercials between, so it's not always the same commercial. Sometimes we'll have a commercial for, Tech Dirt, and sometimes we'll have a commercial for Make, which is another great great website. So it rotates it. So
it does it for you. You don't even have to think about it.
I don't think about it at all. And
that's
it's great.
Because
right now I don't have time to think about anything.
That's great. So are you actually making money on day one? You have ads on day one?
Well, actually, it was just really like a traffic
unbelievable
and sharing
unbelievable
deal. So right now we're not selling ads.
Oh, all good. All right.
You'd see on Web Alert.
I was going to feel really bad if you were making money on it already.
Absolutely not.
You should. No, you're totally famous. Unpaid. You should. It's just that. Well, in some ways you're smart because you've stood back for the first year of this and let everybody else kind of battle it out and figure out how to do it and so forth. And now you're coming in. It's a much more mature technology. Viewers want to see this, so they're used to it. The idea of going to a website like Web Alert and watching a video is not foreign to them. It's very comfortable for them, and I think this is great. And I have to say, it's going to be a regular watch. I'm just so happy for you. You're going to stick around with G4. Have you decided about that yet?
Definitely. I mean,
this isn't replacing. Okay, I was going to say.
Oh yeah, no. This is not replacing. This is on the side because I have so much free time.
Yeah. No, that's exactly what I do, too. Free time.
You're the hardest man, working man.
Who needs free time? But you know what? It's so fun to participate in this. And in a way, if you're a tech journalist, you kind of almost need to cover it. I mean, this is what's happening, isn't it?
Yeah.
Morgan, great to talk to you. WebAlert.com with two Bs. You can catch Morgan Webb on X-Play on G4 Tech TV. Actually, it's just G4 now, isn't it? G4 TV. Thank you, Morgan. Leo Laporte here. I am the Tech Guy. Well, a very good day to you. Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. 8888 Ask Leo, that's the number. If you want to talk about tech, 888-827-5536. We're talking about computers, of course, but really, more interestingly, what's happening on the net. My friend John C. Dvorak, by the way, says the Web 2.0 bust is on the way. Oh, yeah, yeah. It's bad enough with the Web 1.0 bust. Web 2.0 bust is on the way, he says. We talk about cell phones, of course, not just the iPhone, but all the new cell phones. And certainly the iPhone is a big story. Talk about that a lot. I actually cut back because people were saying, enough, no more. We talk about camcorders. People were asking, what is that camcorder Morgan was talking about, was recommending? It's the Canon HV20. It's a very low cost, $1,000, high def camcorder. It has some nice features, including HDMI out, which means, in theory, you could get a very high-quality image out of it, uncompressed, straight from the CCD image. So that's interesting. We talk about home theater, too. Coming up in just a bit, our gadget guru, Ron Rosberg, will be here. We also have our digital photography expert, as always, to Chris Marquardt with the tips from the top floor. Lots of good stuff coming up. I want to declare victory, by the way. Very pleased to report. Remember last week we were talking about the fact that in the state of California, Secretary of State Deborah Bowen had asked hackers from the University of California at Berkeley, white hat hackers, the good guys, to try to break into the three electronic voting machines that would be used in California in the February primaries. And they were able to hack all three. All three. Now, of course, they had all the information Secretary of State Bowen had. They had the manuals, the source code, all the information she had, which gave them a head start. But the point was they were able to change voting results on all three machines. On Friday, Secretary of State Bowen decertified the electronic voting machines. Now, she's in a tough spot because the counties who supervise the elections have purchased these and spent millions of dollars. So she can't just say throw them out. So what she's done, and I think this is sensible, she's decertified them, but is willing to recertify as long as they adhere to certain security rules. We're acknowledging that these machines have problems and trying to address the problems without throwing out the millions of dollars spent by the counties on these machines. Now the House of Representatives is looking at a bill to prevent electronic voting machines unless they offer a paper trail. And that's the key. With a paper trail, you can validate, you can verify, you can recount. There's got to be a receipt both for the voter and for the registrar so you can go back. I'm very pleased. I'm very pleased that the Secretary of State's done this. This has been an issue for quite a while, and it's really a lot of states have just stuck their head in the sand. The state of California said, no, we better look at this. And boy, I think they had their eyes opened. These machines were hacked almost immediately. Almost instantaneously. There's a movie about this, which I have not seen. But when we talked about this last week, I got a lot of email from people talking about this movie. Is it Hacking Democracy? Saying this is the movie to see on this subject. Actually, I think it was on HBO. Hacking Democracy. You can watch it on YouTube. I have a feeling, you could at some point watch it on YouTube. I had a feeling that it's gone now. Russell, who sent this along to me in November, was the first one to tell me about this, gave me the links, but I bet you they're all gone now. Still worth finding out more. I think you could probably get it on Netflix or rent it if you have a good movie store. Hacking Democracy. Do you use a laser printer? Are you in the office? According to an Australian report, certain models of laser printer put off so much ultra-fine particulate pollution. I like that. I'm going to make up an acronym, UFPP. Ultra-fine particulate pollution. That it's as if you had a smoker in the next cubicle. Air pollution from the toner. The worst printers released amounts of ultra-fine particles rivaling plumes of secondhand smoke. Now, what happens, they work their way into the lungs, leading to heart and lung disease. This is not something to ignore. They tested printers. Unfortunately, they didn't test the one sitting right behind me. And I wish they had. They tested printers from Hewlett-Packard, Toshiba, Ricoh, and Canon. All use powdered toner, just like copy machines. Newer printers, I think, have been sealed, are a little bit better about this, but you might want to look at the list. Let's see if we can get a list. The study is online. I'm actually looking at the full study on the SF Gate, and it has a list of all the printers. Unfortunately, it's not every they didn't test every printer. A lot of these HP color laser jets are bad, but then a lot of them are good too. So I can't just say. I'll give you an example. a high-level emitter, the HP Color LaserJet 4650DN. A non-emitter, HP Color LaserJet 4550DN. So you can see even within, not only within the same manufacturer, but even within the same family of laser printers, some are good and some are not. But it might be something worth checking, especially if you sit next to a laser printer in your office. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the number. Let's get back to the phones right now. And Bill is on the line from Thousand Oaks, California. Hey, Bill. Bill, turn down your radio and come to the phone.
Oh, hello.
Hey, how are you today?
Yeah, I'm good. Thank you for taking my call.
Well, thanks for hanging on for so long. I appreciate it.
Uh-huh. Well, the reason I'm calling is I bought a new Sharp 19-inch LCD.
Okay.
And I'm old-fashioned. I'm from the school of tube TV.
Yeah.
And what I noticed, what has really got me bugged, and my wife is noticing my being bugged, is when I'm about 3 feet or less away from this and I'm looking at it, and I couldn't figure out how to describe it till this morning before your show, because I think what I'm about to say you've said in the past, it's like I'm looking through a screen door.
Yep. Screen door effect.
I'm looking at this, and yep. I'm looking at the images, and they're not clear like I'm used to with the old-fashioned tube TV.
You're absolutely right. Now, remember that the old-fashioned tube TV looks clear because it's smeared. It's smeary. So you're seeing those screen door effect, you're seeing individual pixels on the screen. It is a side effect of the way LCDs are made. All LCDs do it. Now,
so
if it's bugging you a lot,
case of get used to it, Bill.
No, well, it is if you want an LCD. But if it's bugging you a lot, there is another technology that much reduces this called LCOS, LCOS.
Uh-huh.
But they don't make direct view LCOSs like your direct view LCD. They're all rear projector.
Mm-hmm.
But that is primary. I think that's the primary selling point of these LCOS screens. Sony makes them under the SXRD label. And JVC makes them, and I actually love the JVCs under the DILA. You've probably heard me talk about it, and this is the main...
I have.
Yeah. You didn't notice it. It's one of those things where until you notice it, you don't see it, and then once you see it, you'll never not see it.
Yeah.
It's really frustrating.
You got it. Exactly.
Yep. Now, exactly. I mean, you're sitting awfully close. 3 feet's pretty close.
That, like I said, it's in a small room, and when you're 4 or 6 feet away from it, which is the norm, it's fine.
Yeah.
But I was just, like I said, it's like when I go up to shut it off or whatever, it just hits me right in the eyes.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that. It's just, it is the way it is on LCD. All of them do it.
I'm not very hip when it comes to electronics. What does LCD stand for?
Liquid crystal display. And this is the reason. Essentially, the way an LCD works is there is a light behind the screen. It's usually a fluorescent light, although lately they've been moving to LED lights. And the LCDs, the liquid crystals, are shutters which open and close on the command of the electronics. And so when they open, the light shines through. When they're closed, the light doesn't shine through. There are, for each pixel, red, green, and blue LCDs, and so they open the right amount to show the right color combination. What you're seeing is the divider between the cells, the little liquid crystal cells, and there is a visible divider. I'm guessing that the reason LCOS is different for one reason is it's not transmissive. It's not a light going through the liquid crystals. It's a light bouncing off the liquid crystals. It's reflective. And I don't know if that's the reason that you don't see these borders, or in the manufacturing they're able to get the cells closer together. I suspect it's probably that. But for whatever reason, you don't have this visible border. Now, if you get a computer screen LCD that's very high resolution, you'll have to get much closer to see the lines. It's only because your TV is a lower resolution, because it doesn't need to be such high resolution, that you can see the lines.
This one says it has the ability that I could jack my computer into.
Right. But it's probably a lower resolution. You know, it's certainly not more than 1,200, 1,600 by 1,200. Most big...
And the resolution, it says here, it's 1,440 by 900.
Right. There you go. So for a computer screen, that would be relatively low resolution. If you get a big LCD for your computer, you'll still be able to see it. You'll just have to get closer. It's on all LCDs, though, and there's nothing much you can do about it. It's... Just sit a little farther or squint. Take your glasses off. It'll look great. And really, that's what happens. By the way, you know, we've been looking at really lousy displays on our CRTs with NTSC television, you know, standard definition television on a CRT. You don't see defects. You don't see these things because it's so smeared. It's not that they're not there. In fact, if you take that same signal and put it on your good LCD, it won't be the lines you'll be worried about. It's all the jaggies and the other stuff. Leo Laporte here. I am the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the number. Plain talk on all kinds of technology. That's what we do here in plain English. It's not English. No, it is English. It's plain talk. It's kind of geeky English. It's kind of ginglish. Anyway, I was just reading. I got a little distracted because somebody sent me a link to Gizmodo. This is really typical, and I have to say, I do not read Gizmodo for this reason. It's a gadget blog. I prefer Engadget. Gizmodo is somehow just seems to get it wrong more often than not. They published a rumor saying this is really true. This is what we're going to expect at the Apple event, and. And then if you go back to the page, it says, oops, the source is rotten. This is a fraud. We're retracting it. A Google of the guy's email shows him to be a fraud. But why didn't they Google it before they printed it? Is my question. Apparently Engadget figured it out and let them know. Yeah. So Tuesday, Apple will make some announcements. They have said already it will not be an iPod or iPhone announcement. Almost everybody agrees, and I think this is pretty credible. It's just time. Not because of any leaks out of Apple. You cannot count on leaks out of Apple. They're amazing at their ability to control leaks. But almost everybody agrees. It'll be a new iMac, probably a brushed metal iMac. Whence the mini? Not clear. Not clear. Some people believe Apple will discontinue the mini. Others think it's time for an update for the mini. We'll find out. But if you read a rumor on a website about what Apple's going to do, you can pretty much ignore it. And when people ask me, what's Apple going to do? I just say, I don't know. And the reason is, Steve Jobs is paranoid about leaks. When he came back to Apple, the first thing he did is clamped down, and he'll do all sorts of things. He'll do a little thing called a canary trap. He's done this before. He's been known to do this. I have a good friend who knows specifically of an occasion of him doing this where this is the kind of stuff the CIA does. Well, he'll create disinformation. He'll create a rumor, a story about something Apple's going to do and give it to a select few. That's what he did apparently at one point a few years ago to four executives. He said, if this leaks out, a pain of death. You will be fired if this leaks out. It leaked. He fired all four of them. Didn't know which one leaked it, but he fired all four of them. He does that kind of thing. So something, or he'll give different information to different people, and then the one that leaks out, that's the one he fires. And Apple employees know this. And so you're not going to get anything from them. I've tried. I'll talk to an Apple employee, and they're good. I mean, they just dodge it. They're so good at dodging. So when's Leopard going to come out? Nice weather we're having, isn't it? I mean, they won't give you anything. They won't even say, I can't talk about that. They just change the subject because they know their job's on the line. So anything you read about what Apple's going to do Tuesday, just completely discount it. Don't ask me. I don't know. I do think it will be the iMac, not on any rumor, but just based on the fact that they're due. That's all. Bruce is on the line from Laguna Beach, California. Hi, Bruce. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. I have a problem. I've bought an Apple TV, which I really love.
Okay.
I've got it hooked up to a 50-inch Pioneer. But shortly after I bought it, my iMac hard drive failed.
Aye.
And it was a severe failure, which I lost everything there.
But everything was on the Apple TV.
I thought so, but now I'm trying to figure out, is there a third-party software that would allow me to retrieve all my content? Because I've got thousands of photos. Thousands of various types of music, and it's sitting there nicely and working. But
the key right now is not to sync it up ever again, right? You can't hook it up.
I'm not dreaming of syncing for that reason.
The minute you connect it to another iTunes, it will erase everything without asking, without anything. It just boom, it'll be gone.
But right, I'll avoid doing that.
It is on that hard drive. I don't know of any utility to get it off. You can absolutely get it off by opening up the Apple TV, taking out the hard drive, connecting it up to your computer. You can either use I'll tell you what I use, and I'll have it right here. It's actually a very handy, like $30 cable from Newer Tech. It's a USB drive adapter, so you can connect it right to that drive. It's got a port for a laptop drive because that's what's in that Apple TV. And then it shows up as a USB drive, and it's got the OS X file structure. You can find your data and copy it over. Now, the drawback to doing this is your Apple TV will never be the same.
It'll never be the same?
Well, do as I say, not as I do. I took mine apart. It's very easy to take it apart. You turn it over, that rubber pad on the bottom just peels off. It's just glued on. You could use a putty knife if you wanted to, but frankly, I was able just to peel it off. It's easier when it's hot, which it is almost all the time until you unplug it. So just peel it off. You'll see screws there. You need a Torx driver, not a standard screwdriver. You can get it at any hardware store. Those little Torx, they're like octagons. And you remove those, and the hard drive is screwed to the base plate. So you carefully lift the base plate off, disconnect the hard drive, then unscrew the hard drive. If you do it very carefully, and you don't lose any of the little silver pads, that's what I did wrong, is the silver pads are used to damp motion in the drive. And frankly, when I put it back together, it went back together and worked, but it was louder. So don't lose any of the silver pads because you don't want a loud Apple TV. But that drive is a standard OS X drive, and you can easily get the data off of it. It's still there.
But at this point, though, that's the only way. There's no
software. I don't know of any software to do it. No, I mean, maybe before you take it apart, let's see if somebody's figured this out. Well, okay, I do know of a way, but it tell you what, hang on. I'll tell you the super secret, tricky way to do it. And you might say it's easier to open the thing up. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, Ron Rosberg, our gadget guru, coming up. GoToMeeting web conferencing, everyone can see your computer desktop on their computer screen. It's changing the way we do business. Try it free for 30 days. Go to gotomeeting.com, click the orange try it free button.
It took a long time to get to me. Promo code. Lots of digits.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888, Ask Leo. That's the phone number, and we're going to get to our gadget guru, Ron Rosberg, in just a sec. But I just want to wrap it up quickly with, was it Bruce who had the Apple TV? I'm going to put in the show notes a link to something called Patch Stick that does, I mean, you can, without opening the Apple TV, in theory, modify it in such a way that you can get data off of it. It's tricky. It's difficult. Most importantly, it may not work. And I want you to look at right at the top of the Patch Stick wiki. It says, first of all, there are some copies of Patch Stick images in the wild. Most likely, these will not work. Also, they are illegal. Also, some people report that Patch Stick erased their Apple TV, resulting in a non-recoverable Apple TV. So, folks, Bruce, you may not want to do this. The safest thing to do is to take it out, and it's not that hard to do. It's not going to damage anything. It's totally doable. If you wanted to try to do it in software, you could. You'd think somebody had written in a utility, and maybe they have. I'm still looking for it. I don't think there is one. But if somebody's written a utility, we'll put it in the show notes, techguylabs.com. Now, say hello to Ron Rosberg, our gadget guru. Sorry, Ron, I just wanted to get that out of the way before we...
Hello, Ron Rosberg, your gadget guru.
No, you don't have to say that. What do you think?
Oh,
you are?
Okay.
What, you think you're Gracie Allen here? Good night, Ron.
I didn't even get my little chat talk before we go on air.
I tried to call. No, I tried to call you, and you didn't show up as online, so something weird was going on.
Yeah, no, I was online. I know. Dial you back.
Hey, we're using, for people who don't know, we use Skype for this call. That's why Ron sounds so good.
No, I'm right next to him. Don't believe a word he says. I'm standing right, and everybody says, it sounds like you're in the studio. In fact, I was probably a few blocks away from your studio yesterday, Leo.
Coming back from Clear Lake?
Well, no, there were 14. A friend of mine owns one of these Saturn Sky cars, you know, the cute little convertibles that Saturn and Pontiac Solstice put out. And they're like $25,000. They're very reasonable, and they're a really neat car. But it's a big car club throughout the United States. So he goes on rides every weekend. So he asked me if I wanted to go. I said, where's this start from? He says, Petaluma. I said, yeah, maybe I'll see Leo.
Well, you should have called. I would have loved to have seen you.
We actually went up to Point Arena.
Oh, fun.
It's beautiful there. Great time. And I got to tell you, one of the products I'm talking about today, Leo, he took a ton of pictures. I did too. I had a Canon camera, and he had a Olympus with an XD card, and he took probably 200 or 300 pictures, stopped every place. And we even went to the church that the Birds was filmed at. You remember? We went up there and we stopped there, and all these cars, and even the photographer from the town came up there and took pictures and stuff. But he had about 300 or 400 pictures that he took, and guess what? Got back, and none of them were on his card. So I said, wait a second. I've got a product that I talked about on one of the other shows. Let me go grab it. Let's see if we can get it back. And it so happens this other gentleman called earlier. But IOLO, I-O-L-O, Search and Recover 4, Leo, I put it in. And within a minute, it came back and said there's 1,055 files that it can recover.
Wow.
And it took about an hour, hour and a half, and it transferred them from his card over to the hard drive.
Is it only for flashcards for cameras, or will it do it?
No. You know, it's hard drives, and all. In other words, you can use a hard drive, you can use a flash drive, you can use the storage cards or whatever.
I've used IOLO's other software, and they're very good.
Yeah, by the way, it's $29.95.
That's the one to get, then. I'm going to start recommending that.
Yeah, so I just want to tie it in here perfectly, because he's going to come back. He started it this morning. It's probably going to take all day to recover these things, and in less than an hour, it put 1,000. Well, I don't know how many, actually all he wants is what he took yesterday. The rest of them he's already downloaded from other days. But just a great product, IOLO Search and Recover 4. And by the way, I think you can go on their website. If you ever have an like this gentleman, I didn't go on their website, and they have a test on the thing, or at least they did when I reviewed this first time, and it will tell you, yes, it will make it out, recovered or not.
So, I hate those, because they're really just a tease, because then they say, well,
that's fine. But what I'm saying is, at least he could find out if there is something there. That's without paying $29.95.
Yeah, good point.
Okay. Yeah, that's all there.
IOLO, and I agree. That's a very good company. They do great stuff. You know, my SanDisk, I bought a SanDisk, a very high-end SanDisk card, compact flash card, and a FireWire SanDisk reader, and both of them came with recovery software. So I think if you buy some of the high-end memory cards now, they'll come with recovery software.
I believe that's correct. But this was one that I just did today. I'm very pleased with it, and I'm sure it's going to make him happy. Second item I want to talk about, Leo, is a Sanyo. You're using the HD 2, and I have one also, which I really love. In fact, I used that yesterday. But I also they sent me their new waterproof one, the camera,
the E1.
It's very lightweight, and it will go down as low as 5 feet below the water. Okay, it's not made to go down 30 or 40 feet or whatever, but 5 feet below the water. So if you're snorkeling or whatever, you could take some waterproof pictures. It has seals built into this camera, has a great LCD screen on it, and just if you want just a fun kind of video camera, it also has a 6-megapixel still camera in it. Also uses the SD card like the HD 2 does. It's not high definition. But it's just a great camera for parties and tag along. One thing you do want to do is if you go underwater, make sure you put the carrying strap on and put it around
you. Don't lose it.
Well, it will sink. It will sink and go below. Okay, so you want to do that. And Amazon has them for $450, so it's a great little present if you're looking for maybe a upcoming gift for someone or even Christmas.
You know, Dicky Bartolo has one, and he attached it to one of those monopod things. And he took pictures of the bottom of his boat, because he's a boater. Mm-hmm. And you could see the barnacles and everything. He said it was very good quality images.
Yeah. And by the way, read the reviews. I have the link up for Amazon. And read the reviews. It's got 4 or 5 wonderful reviews on this camera. So, I love Sanyo. And by the way, Sanyo's been making camcorders and cameras for a long, long time. They are one of the biggest OEM camera manufacturers.
I love these little camcorders. I've been very happy with the Exactis.
I took the HD2 with me yesterday, and I'm anxious to look at those videos there. The last thing I want to talk about, Leo, is it's not a gadget. Well, it is. It is a software gadget, and I've been using it for a number of years. You're probably going to say, well, because it's not out for the Mac, and they'd love to be able to come out with for the Mac, but it does cost a lot of money, and Mac is becoming more of a force in the industry. There's no doubt about it, and maybe someday they'll have it for the Mac. But it's active words, Leo. And,
oh, we don't need it. We've got other stuff that's like it. But you were the one who turned me on to active words, and I agree. It's a wonderful program.
I tell you, Leo, it is. Now, what it is, it's $49.95, by the way, and what's really I love about it now is that you could put it, once you start using it, like right today, and just like you, you're using a bunch of computers. Now, I realize you can't use it on the Apples. But right here in my office, I've got two desktops and two portables running, okay? And then I've got another room in my family room, I got a couple portables. So I really use these. I'm in different computers, different things during the day. And once you have active words on one computer, it doesn't make a lot of sense if you don't have it on the other computer.
Oh, you get hooked on it, I know. Yeah.
Now what they allow you to do for $49.95, you could put it on every one of your computers.
Oh, that's good.
Okay, now this doesn't allow you, if you're a big company with 500 employees, no, they have the Enterprise Edition, and I think it's $29.95 per application there. But for $49.95, put them on all your computers you have at home that you're yourself using, your portable, your desktop, maybe at work and stuff. It's a great product. And what this is, if you go to different sites a lot of times, like, you know, and most of us do, we go to, even let's say Google, you might just type G, nothing else, and it'll take you to the Google site. You can give it your own keywords. For example, a lot of times I'm over trying to get rid of my Giant tickets, Leo, because the Giants are not doing well.
Hey, now that Barry's hit 755, you don't have to go anymore.
No, I know that. No, you're right. Right. So I just type in TIX, and bang, takes me right into doing, instead of going to five layers deep into the Giants, I'm right to the double play ticket window.
No, this is an excellent program. I love it.
Yeah, it is a great product, and they keep developing. They have spell checkers on there. They keep developing new and exciting things about it.
There's a little bit of a learning curve. It's the only thing I should warn people about. You can't try it free for 2 months, and I think that's why they do it. It takes you a little while to get into it.
You get 5 days, and then if you go ahead and register the product, they'll give you 60 days on it. So try it. Once you get hooked on it, it is really easy.
Oh, you got it.
For example, my signature. Well, you know, I put a lot of stuff in my signature line. I don't want to type that each and time. So what I do is I type SIG, space. Right. I use a space bar as my trigger. And it then puts that whole thing in. You can have lots of different triggers. So, again, activewords.com, highly recommend. It's a great $49.95 investment.
Ron Rosberg, I thank you so much. He's the gadget guru. And you can catch him every week at this time on the show. But you can also visit clearlake.org and Rent a resort from him as well.
Yeah, tell me when you're coming up.
We're going to come up.
5,000 or more, I'll be up there.
I want to come up for Henry's 13th birthday and bring a couple of guys. Could I come up in a couple of weeks? I'll call you. We'll talk about it.
Send me an email. I use email.
Email. Ron, what is it?
Ronald at USA.net.
Or ron@techguylabs.com. That also works.
Look forward to talking to you next week, Leo.
Thanks, Ron. Take care.
Bye.
Ron Rosberg. By the way, there, you know, I don't worry so much about the fact that there isn't an active words for the Mac, because there are very good applications that do the same thing. For the text substitution, Type It For Me or Text Expander, both are excellent. And I use both all the time. I use Type It For Me on one machine and Text Expander on the other, and they're dynamite. Same thing, you type SIG and it'll put your signature in. And then for the launching applications, of course, the free Quicksilver is one of those Mac applications that if you don't have, you've got to get. Yeah, Quicksilver. And that's from quicksilver.blacktree.net. And Type It For Me is typeitforme.com. Text Expander is smileonmymac.com. 8888-ASK-LEO is my number. All of that information and more will be available in our show notes, techguylabs.com. We put it all up there for your perusal. You can also join us in the chat room. 393 people. Will we get a record? Is 400 a record? Is 400 a record? I don't know. I don't think we've ever had quite so many in there. Join Dan and Dustin and Illuminati and Mick and Mike and Shuby, all moderating it to keep it safe and sound and clean and healthy. irc.dslextreme.com. And you can also watch video. Now, I'm doing something kind of different this time. We've got a video picture, and that's running on stickum.com. I rotate back and forth between stickum and ustream.tv. And on the second feed, on the Ustream feed, I'm actually doing a screen capture. So you can kind of see some of the things I'm talking about right now. For instance, I've got zoomed in on the chat room. So if you want to see both the picture of me talking, woohoo, and the screen, my screen that I'm looking at, you can do that by going to twit.tv/live, twit.tv/live. That's my podcast network, Twit. We get all the show. I do 14, 12, something like that, shows every single week. You can catch them all during the week at twit.tv. More of your calls coming up. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the number. We're talking about tech, everything having to do with technology, from software and hardware to gadgets to home theater. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's 888-827-5536. To line three we go. That's, looks like Mark in Salinas, California. Hey, Mark.
Okay, Leo, I'm with you.
I'm here.
Hey, how you doing? I had you on speaker.
Yeah, I'm sorry to keep you on hold so long.
No, that's okay. I was up at the transmitter site with Mr. and Mrs. Oomph.
Congo. You remember that.
I remember that. Do you still have the sounds on your website?
You've been around a long time. I think I took those sounds down. I was a little worried about getting in trouble. you want to hear it, though, just for old time's sake?
I like the rude sounds.
Yeah, I don't have any rude sounds.
The time is now 2 a.m. in Bakava, Belgian Congo.
There you go.
That's, we used to begin the radio show that way. That's gone way back. I used to begin the radio show what I did with Dvorak that way in the early 90s.
Yeah. Well, I was in a larger room when I spoke with your screener, and she asked me if I could move into a...
Are you in the closet room now?
I sound okay.
You sound great.
I sound like a radio guy, you know?
You sound fine.
Good.
Yes.
I'm using a Toshiba laptop.
Okay.
And it came originally with XP Home, and I blew that away, and I installed Windows Vista Home Basic.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have any sleep mode.
It's
grayed out. I've tried everything to get it to work. And is that not a feature of Home Basic?
Yeah, they don't. Home Basic is pretty basic. I can't believe they would leave sleep mode out for you.
Yeah, there's no sleep mode. I went into
that's
power
absurd.
Options and advanced settings.
Now
and
it could
that.
Be. It probably is not that they left it out. I bet you it's in Vista, but that when you installed Vista on that machine, remember laptops implement their sleep in a variety of different ways, and they use something called ACPI, and unfortunately, the ACPI standard is very vague. And so what happens is Windows, when you install any NT-based Windows, it queries the hardware and says, well, what kind of ACPI system are you? And if it sees the appropriate power management, if it sees APM or ACPI, it will install the kernel appropriate to that. If it doesn't, and this is probably what happened to you, whether it does accurately or not, if it doesn't, then it won't offer you those sleep modes. It won't, and you know what? You cannot get them enabled without reinstalling.
Ooh.
Because it depends on which kernel, literally, which kernel of the operating system is installed. So you've got the wrong kernel. And I'm willing to bet that Home Basic has sleep. I can't believe it wouldn't have sleep. Now, admittedly, Microsoft made Home Basic absolutely useless. They didn't want anybody to get Basic. They wanted you to get Basic and upgrade.
Yeah.
So for most people, I'm telling them the best version of Vista is Home Premium.
Right.
Not Ultimate. Yeah. You don't get much more for that extra $100.
Right.
I think Home Premium is kind of the sweet spot.
Yeah.
So Basic's not awful, and I'm sure it has sleep. I think that it's most likely the fact that when you installed it yourself on that laptop, and at that time, either Vista didn't have a driver for the Toshiba ACPI, or, and this happens all the time on desktops too, it just didn't see it. And so it installed the wrong kernel.
Yeah, you know, I don't think the hardware on this computer will support it. That's the problem.
You know what? One thing you might want to try just to make sure that you're giving it every opportunity is go to Toshiba's site.
Yeah, I did.
Okay, and
they don't have any downloads.
They have no downloads. Okay, so Taz is telling me in the chat room that he's got Home Basic. It does have sleep, and of course it does.
Really?
You can't have you couldn't put out Windows without sleep. So it's probably if you can't get Vista drivers on the Toshiba site, it's probably that you just it's either not supported as you think, or the installation didn't recognize it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm. I guess there's not much I can do. I leave it running quite a bit.
You want sleep mode because it saves you. Do you have Hibernate? Do you have any kind of?
No. Now, you know what Vista, what Microsoft did was they combined
sleep and Hibernate, right?
Sleep. There's no more Hibernate.
So you've got no way to kind of
shut down. Switch user, log off, lock, restart. Sleep is grayed out and shut down.
Yeah. See, I have a Hibernate on mine.
Yeah.
As well as sleep. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
With Vista?
Yeah. So I think what happened is really, truly, either there aren't any drivers in Vista for that particular model of Toshiba, or when, as I said, and this happens all the time with NT variants, including XP, it would happen with. It didn't recognize it when you first installed it, and so it has installed the wrong kernel. There is a kernel that supports ACPI, and there's a kernel that doesn't support ACPI. And if it installs the wrong one, you'll never get sleep or Hibernate. So depending on how far down the road you've gone, you might... clearly, the first thing to do is check and make sure Toshiba doesn't have a Vista driver. If you don't have Vista, the generic Vista drivers for the system. And then the next thing to do is try reinstalling. I know. Isn't that a nice answer? That's one of the few things you really do need to reinstall for. If you've got the wrong kernel installed, the non-ACPI kernel, there's nothing you can do about it. Barbara, Grand Blanc or Grand Blanc, Michigan? Blanc or Blanc?
Blanc.
Blanc.
It's Leo.
Bonjour, Barbara. Comment ça va?
It's Leo Laporte.
Oh my God.
I have a bone to pick with you first.
Okay.
I bought an iPod in 2005, basically because I fell in love with audiobooks, and I found Audible.com.
Isn't it great?
I have like 400 books waiting on my wish list, but I discovered the Twit Network in February.
Uh-oh. And now you don't listen to podcasts and
your
not...
I have not listened to a book in months.
And now Audible is a sponsor of Twits.
So
don't tell them that.
I hear you recommend a book. I write it down. Go, oh, yeah, I got to get that. But I got to listen to all these previous podcasts that I'm catching up on.
Oh, first of all, don't catch up. Throw them out. If you didn't hear it the first time, throw it out. And then the second thing is just spend more time listening. Clearly, you're not listening enough. Hey, hang on the line, Barbara. We're going to talk some more in just a bit. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And welcome. Let's talk some tech here. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, and I'm ready to talk with you about technology. 888-ASK-LEO is the number. 888-ASK-LEO if you'd like to talk about anything having a chip in it. Coming up in just a little bit, Chris Marquardt with some more digital photography tips. Tips from the top floor. We'll see how you're doing on our assignment this week as well. I was talking with Barbara in Grand Blanc, Michigan. Hello, Barbara. How are you today?
I am excellent because I'm talking to you.
Oh, I'm so glad. So you listen to every podcast I do?
Pretty much, yeah.
That's a lot.
I'm up to October for this week in media.
Don't try to catch up. You know, we produce. You know, that's one of the beauties of podcasting is that at least audio anyway. It's very inexpensive and easy and fast. It's just like doing a radio show. So. I do two shows a day, two podcasts a day, 7 days a week.
I know all of them.
Yeah, I know.
And I haven't listened to a book in for ages.
Well, keep listening. You know, I'm listening right now to the sixth volume of Harry Potter, which frankly makes a better listen than a read, I think.
Isn't that off CD? Because I can't find it on Audible.
The new one is not yet on The new one is not yet on download. It's only, you have to buy it in the store as a CD. But I'm listening to the last one, which is available from iTunes, but not Audible, even though Audible is the provider. And I think what happened, and this is in the U.S., and I think what happened is that the publisher, Scholastic, this is my guess. I have no inside story, but I think what happened is the publisher, Scholastic, auctioned off the right to sell the Harry Potter audiobooks. For a while, Audible did have them all, and all of a sudden they disappeared. And I think what happened is Apple outbid Audible. Audible still provides them, but they're only available on iTunes, and they're expensive. It's like $50.
Well, I previously bought those on cassette, so...
Right. Well, it's cheap. You know, it's. I think the price is comparable to buying the physical media.
Yeah.
But it's sure a lot more convenient to buy books. If you're going to listen to books, to buy them online is so much more convenient.
Oh, Audible is my friend.
Me too. Well, and I don't even have a commute. You know, that's what... I'm in your boat. I used to listen to books. I had a 2 to 3 hour commute every single day. So I would get, that's 2 to 3 hours of reading time a day. I loved it. And then I stopped commuting and I haven't read a whole lot since then. And it's kind of killing me.
Yeah. That's, I was commuting down to U of M for my master's degree and that's how I got hooked on books on TV.
Yeah. Yeah. Anybody who spends any time in the car, it's either, you know, I mean, obviously talk radio is great. And then if there's something, there's nothing on that you want to listen to, podcasts or just basically talk radio that you've downloaded. Or books
without
on tape.
The commercials.
Without the commercials. I spend more time in the car. I actually drive around the block so I can hear the end of the chapter. It's terrible. So what can I do for you, Barb?
Well, I have a Comcast cable, two questions. We have Comcast cable basic. We have 6 TVs. We have 6 VCRs.
Oh, my goodness. VCRs like with tape in them?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes, we are from the dark ages over here. But Comcast is proceeding to gradually move a lot of our favorite channels to the digital side.
Yep.
So you have to buy the digital cable to get
all the cable companies want you to go digital.
So they're pushing us to go to digital, yep. But I checked and it's going to be $8. You have to buy a digital box per TV.
Yep.
And then it's going to be $8 a box per month per TV.
Isn't that awful?
Is there any way around that?
Let me think. Yeah, there may be, but I don't know if it'll be cheaper. here's the deal. First of all, the cable companies want to go digital just as the satellite companies have gone digital because it's cheaper for them. They can get more channels on the same cable. That's the only way you're going to get to that 500 channel universe is by going digital. Plus, let's face it, you got to buy a box and they get to rent the box to you and they get to make money on it. It is a drag because one of the advantages that cable had over satellite was you could have as many TVs as you have cable outlets, and you didn't need to get a box for each of them.
It didn't start that way. It used to be, I mean, you had to pay to have it installed on new machines, you know, if you wanted your cable routed, and people were cheating and going on.
Yeah, once you get the cable in the room, though, and many houses had cable in every room, and then you just would plug it in. So, in any event, I think that this is just, you know, look, let's face it. The cable companies are second only to the wireless phone companies in greed, annoyance, monopoly.
And there's nobody stopping them.
Nobody can stop them. The way the cable companies work is they get a municipal license. The only people who could stop them is your city. They get a license, but usually it's a 10-year license from the city to be the cable operator. And this started historically because it was so expensive to put the cable in. The FCC kind of, or whoever it was, FTC was governing it, said, look, we're going to give you a local monopoly because you just can't support two companies. We don't want two people trenching in the ground and all of that stuff. So they have municipal monopolies. Now, fortunately, there is some competition. There's satellite right now, and there'll be competition from the phone company, I believe. I think one of the reasons Verizon's putting in all of this fiber optic cable is they want to do the same thing. In fact, in some localities, they want to be another cable company. I think the cable companies are in trouble. I think it's a very, and I shouldn't say this because I do cable television, but it's very a tough time right now for them. However, how do we solve?
To the phone companies, they laid the lines and then they said,
right.
No monopoly. Anybody can use the line.
That's right.
Why can't cable do the same?
Well, I think that, you know, lobby your member of Congress. I think that's the kind of thing that should happen at this point. I agree with you. Or talk, and frankly, local municipalities have some clout too, because as I said, they're the ones who approve the franchise. So they can throw Comcast out if they want. You know, in my small city, I was on the technology advisory board, and I lobbied for this hard. Comcast really mistreated our city. They made a lot of promises they didn't keep. But boy, you know, where you go? Who else? What other cable company are you going to get?
Well, the only way to bring the price down is to bring competition, not necessarily get rid of one and bring in another.
I think you're right, and I think that's why maybe the phone companies coming in might make some difference. Of course, they're monopolies too, aren't they?
Yeah.
We'll just have to see. I think probably for you, there are some solutions. Six TVs is a lot. Six TVs is a lot. And it, you know what would be nice?
All season, you want to tape it.
I understand. Now here, well, now that's the question I was going to ask. Is it six different channels?
Yeah.
Okay. So you need. I'll tell you one thing. No matter what solution, you need a different cable box for each channel you're going to watch. If you were going to only watch three channels, you'd get away with three cable boxes and split it. But it's the cable box, it's that digital box that that chooses the channel and decodes it. So if you're going to watch six different channels, you have to have six different boxes. Now, there is a light at the end of the tunnel. The FCC is requiring cable companies to support something called Cable Card that eliminates the set-top box and allows you to buy a TV, for instance, with a built-in digital decoder, and all you do is put the card in there.
Oh.
Or buy a card for your computer, and all you do is put the card in there. The card says, yes, Barb owns the right to decode this. She's paid whatever she needs to pay. Go ahead. And then the decoder is actually built into. And the FCC, for this exact reason, to increase competition, is mandating this. The cable companies have been dragging their heels. They don't want to do it. They hate this idea. They'd much rather charge you $8 a box per month. So that's another thing to keep an eye out for. Cable Card is, I think the FCC said, you know, they kept putting it off. They kept putting it off. And I think now the deadline is, it's soon. So I think it might have already happened, come to think of it. So what I would do is ask your cable company, well, I would like to get Cable Card. They won't tell you about it. And then you can buy your own box. At least you won't have to pay rent.
So, okay.
Then you can buy,
okay, that'd be great.
Or buy a TV that is cable card ready, or buy, you know, a device, some kind of device that's cable card ready. You can now buy your own set-top boxes. You could buy a TiVo, for instance. You know, you could buy any device that's supported cable card. And I'm sure that Comcast in your neck of the woods is supporting it. They have to.
Yes, I believe they are. Yeah. You can get a TiVo at the Comcast.
And then you put it's a PC card. You'll recognize it if you're a computer user. It's a PC card.
But then again, you're paying the $13 a month.
Well, then that's the question. Are they going to charge per cable card if they do the same thing for cable cards? Or, well, yeah, you pay for the TiVo. Well, it doesn't have to be a TiVo. You can buy a set-top box that supports the cable card. I'm trying to find the date that the FCC finally said, enough is enough. They put it off two or three times. And I think they finally said, I think it's July 1st was the deadline. So I think they're now required to offer you Cable Car.
Oh, great.
Yeah. They won't tell you about it. They're not required to advertise it.
Oh, no.
They're not required to tell you at the store or put it in their brochures. But if you call them, I would ask them about charging for Cable Car. Do they charge by card $8 a month? I don't think they can get away with that. Because you're going to buy your own equipment. So I don't see that. What, are you going to rent you the card? I don't think so. So it should save you money.
Okay.
But short term, it won't because you have to buy new equipment.
Well, technically, since we're using analog TVs to begin with, there's no point in getting, you know, if you're going to get the digital signal, if you're going to pay for that, you might as well get a TV that can take advantage
right.
of it.
So that's another thing. When you're looking for new TVs, you want to look for cable card ready. And all the companies are making cable card ready TVs now.
Okay.
All right. Basically, the news is not great. Consumers, as usual in this stuff, when there are monopolies, consumers get the short end of the stick. It's the same case with the cell phone companies, the same case with the cable companies and the phone companies. Drives me crazy. We need the competition, but we don't have it.
Well, my second question regarding the Comcast is, listening to previous podcasts, even though you said not to, you've indicated one of the best firewalls is to have your router be your firewall.
That's right.
And I had my Dell Precision computer installed 3 years ago, and I got a Netgear ProSafe firewall router.
Good.
But you said to make sure that it's not on its default settings. I can't find, since I had a friend install it, how do I get to the router to find out what settings it has?
I'll tell you about that in a second. I'm gonna hang up because you've been on hold far too long, but listen on the air, and I'll give you the answer on the air. How to secure your router. Some important stuff coming up. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
The Tech Guy is brought to you by DSL Extreme. Call 866-2-GET-NET or visit them online at dslextreme.com.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. That's my number if you want to talk high tech. We're talking with Barbara. She wants to configure her router for optimal security. Now, the first thing to do is you've got to figure out how to get to your router. And it's different on every router. If you look at the manual, it's usually a number you put in your browser, like 192.168.1.1. That's Linksys. Netgear is often .0.1, 192.168.0.1. Although I'm told, I don't have a Netgear, but I'm told Netgear has a very kind of handy way to get to your router's configuration page. Just go, if you have a Netgear router, you go to routerlogin.com. Routerlogin.com will log you in. Isn't that cool? But one way or the other, you just need to, you do it in your browser. Almost all routers have a way of configuring them from the browser. In fact, all that I know of. So you'll be entering in the address. D-Link is 192.168.0.1. Linksys is 1.1. Netgear, I think, is usually 0.1. But once you log in, you'll see all your settings, and you can modify your settings. Now, what do you want to do to secure your router? Well, a couple of things. If it's a Wi-Fi router, a wireless router, very important to turn on WPA encryption. That's all that matters, by the way. Don't worry about hiding your broadcast ID or MAC address filtering. None of that works. If you're worried about hackers, all that stuff's trivial to get around. WPA works. Now, you have to have a good password. Don't put a guessable password in there. But a good password and WPA is all you need. That's for a wireless router. All routers, wired or wireless, there's a couple of other things you should do. You should turn off universal plug and play. Now, this is controversial. And it's because it's convenient to have universal plug and play. What it does is it allows a program on your computer to configure the router without telling you so that it can work. So let's say you get Skype on your computer and Skype needs a special port. It doesn't, but let's say it did. It needs a special port. It can actually talk to the router, say, give me this port, open it up. And it doesn't warn you, doesn't tell you anything. It just does it. Now, that's fine if it's a benign program. What if it's a hacker? It means your firewall's useless because the hacker's saying, hey there, Mr. Router, I'd like you to open port 666 for me so I can let my friends in. You don't want that. That's where universal plug and play will get you in trouble. So Steve Gibson, our security guy, recommends, and I agree, turn off universal plug and play. Also very important, I think, to rename your router. Don't use the default name. It's kind of an announcement that you've got a Linksys or a Netgear or, you know, the default names are known. Default. Name it something. Don't give it your address or your family name. Name it something you'll remember. I use Dead Rockstars, you know, but you can use whatever you remember, planets, but just something you'll remember. And change the default password. That's very important because all those default passwords are well known. They're on databases everywhere. Rename the router, change the default password, turn off universal plug and play. And there's one last thing you might want to do, and that's turn off what's called WAN administration. The ability to log into your router and administer it remotely. Again, giving a hacker an access to your router so that he can open holes in it so that you can get right through. Now, if you've got a good password, you don't have to worry, but it just doesn't hurt to turn that off too. Nobody needs to administer their router from the outside world. So turn off WAN administration, universal plug and play, rename your router and give it a good password. You do that, you've locked it down. If you're on a Wi-Fi router, add on WPA. Now you're secure. That's all. We'll put this in the show notes, techguylabs.com. Were you writing it all down, Shuby? I hope you were. Rick's on the line from Tuckerton, New Jersey. Hello, Rick. How are you today?
Very well. Thank you so much, Leo.
Oh, my pleasure. I enjoy what I do. I'm lucky. I'm a very lucky guy.
Okay. Here's my little problem.
Okay.
I do tech support, and I'm an engineer for the Army, but every time I work on somebody's machine on Windows XP, sorry to tell you about that.
No, hey, but that's probably what they use in the Army.
Yeah, but msconfig.
Yes.
I've researched this error. It's one of these things that says you go into msconfig, you make the changes to get rid of all the junk that the people have, you click apply, and it comes up with this nice error. It says an access denied error was returned while attempting to change the service.
Now,
you may need to log on using an administrator account.
I was just going to ask you that. Are you using the administrator account?
You betcha. I've Googled it. Some people say it's related to McAfee. Some say it's related to Zone Alarm.
Well, it would certainly be one of the things that an antivirus or a security software would immediately do is disable your ability to modify the startup programs. Why? Because that's what a virus wants to do, or spyware. So there's almost certainly some securities. If you are administrator, which means you do have permission, then there's almost certainly some security software on the system blocking it. It could be McAfee, could be Norton, could be Zone Alarm, could be something else. So what you've got to...
It's been a bear for me.
Yeah, you just got to figure out what it is. We see this kind of stuff all the time in a lot of different areas where the security software makes it hard to do security, because the kinds of things you do as a technician to secure a system are exactly the same kinds of things that a bad guy would do to make a system insecure.
Well, that's definite. I do have one thing that I've played with that I thought I'd let you know about.
Oh, I'd love to hear it, yeah.
We go through flash drives and everything, and there's a... Everybody's heard of Corsair that's in the business. They have a new flash drive. It's hard to get because there's a problem with getting memory chips, but it's called a Survivor.
Survivor. I'll look for it, Rick. We're running out of time. I do want to thank you for your service to our nation, though. Really appreciate it. It's great to talk to you. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Automatic secure computer backup over the internet. Try it free at Carbonite.com.
From the Tech Guy Labs, beautiful Northern California way, I am Leo Laporte. We're going to get back to your... I'm the tech guy, you know. We probably know that by now. We're going to get back to your phone calls in just a little bit at 8888-ASK-LEO. But as always at this time, I like to talk to our friend all the way in Tübingen, Germany, the king of the digital camera, Mr. Chris Marquardt. He's the creator of the Tips from the Top Floor podcast at tipsfromthetopfloor.com. Hey, Chris!
Hey, Leo. I'm not sure I'm the king, but I'm trying my best.
Well, I like talking to you because you bring it down to earth, which is nice.
I think it's important, yeah.
Yeah. And you know, you've inspired me to really kind of try to upgrade my digital photography. But everything we talk about is applicable to any kind of camera, really.
Exactly.
I mean, we may mention things that only high-end cameras have, but you always kind of keep it so that anybody can do this.
Well, now, today we want to talk about something that high-end cameras don't have.
What's
that? And you know that, a built-in flash.
Yes. Yes. Well, even my Nikon D70, which was my first digital SLR and was not cheap, I think it was $1,300 at the time, had a built-in flash. But then I upgraded to this very high-end Canon 5D. Lo and behold, it's just like an old film camera. It has a hot shoe, but no flash.
Well, the question is, of course, even if your camera has one, we're not talking about those high-end things today. Should we use the built-in flash? What is it good for? What is it not good for, maybe? And if we should come to the conclusion that we don't want to use it, question is, how can we still get good pictures without it?
I love it. Flash. Flash. What is it good for? Absolutely nothing. I'm not a fan of flash, but you say there are some times when you might want to use it.
Well, there are certainly a few good things about it. A flash in the camera. It's instant light.
It
with you.
Yeah,
it's there. If it's really dark and you need to get this one shot and you don't really mind it being looking like a flash picture, then you don't have to depend on other light sources.
Right.
It's just there. And the pictures taken with a flash usually are sharp. The flash is
so
short that even if the subject is in motion, it's kind of frozen in time.
True. Yep.
Now, there are a few things that are not so good, and one of them is, as the flash is really close to the lens usually, it's basically frontal light. It's like you're shining a pretty strong flashlight into someone's face, and it just doesn't look nice.
And you get more red eye too, because the closer the flash is to the lens, that's where you're going to reflect right back out of the lens, isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah. The retina reflects light back, right. Especially if it's a bit darker and the iris is wide open. There's a lot of opening to reflect through, so that's where red eye comes from.
And that's how we know a lot of people use flashes, because that's about the number one thing people do with these photo editing programs is reduce red eye. So right. Obviously people are using them.
So the pictures, just from the light, from the type of light, from the type of frontal light, I like to call those faces, those flash faces, pancake faces, because they're really flat. There is no depth to them, no shadows on the face, basically. And if there are shadows, then they're typically behind the subject, like a harsh shadow around one of the edges.
It's good, though, because it washes out wrinkles.
Well, it does, yeah. Well, there are other ways to do that in post-processing.
But it is a very flat light. That's why I don't like about it. It's just so strong.
Yeah, the other problem with them is they don't reach that far.
Right.
Maybe a built-in flash might reach somewhere between 3 and 10 feet until it really falls off quickly.
Always cracks me up at concerts and ball games, because I'll see these flashes exactly. going off. And you're going to see nicely lit back of the guy's head in front of you, but you're not going to see anything else.
Exactly. The subject is bright. The background is black. And I recently watched someone taking a picture of the moon with a flash.
Oh, that's good.
That was perfect.
Well, the good news is the flash isn't going to impact the moon at all.
Right. And I mean, most people just don't know. The camera isn't automatic. It fires up the flash when it's too dark.
Right.
Usually those point-and-shoot cameras are a bit too conservative, actually, when it comes to the point when they switch the flash on. So they switch it on when it's usually still bright enough to not use the flash.
Right. So what should we do? I mean, you're right. It's convenient.
Well, and flash, if you know how to handle it, can be a wonderful light. It's neutral in color. It's usually daylight colored.
Right.
So it doesn't give you a color cast. And in the studio, I use flashes all the time, or studio strobes, and they do a pretty good job, but they are off camera. They come from directions where usually light in your vicinity would come from anyway, so they look natural, and you don't know them. But on the camera, if you have let's say you have a DSLR and you bought an external flash that you attach to the hot shoe,
yeah,
the easiest way to get this flash to look more natural is to bounce it off a ceiling or a wall. You can swivel the head of the flash up. You should just be careful if you bounce it against the ceiling that it's not a red ceiling or something, because that will definitely give you a color cast back into the picture.
I like the bounce flash. That's one of the reasons I like the strobe that I bought for my 5D, is because I can tilt it up and bounce
right.
it up. Yeah. But you can't,
but in general,
you can't
in general,
really do that with a built-in flash, can you?
Not really. I mean, yeah. you could use a piece of aluminum
mirror.
Foil or something
yeah.
and mirror it up. But people do that. Some people actually do that. I would say try to not use the flash at all. Find this little button with a little flash symbol on. You usually have to press it multiple times to switch
right.
the flash off, because you kind of switch in between all those modes. There is the kind of the default red eye reduction mode, which is, by the way, something I really hate, because it gives away that you're going to take a picture. There's
right.
this pre-flash, and sometimes
right.
people then think, oh, the picture is over, and walk away, and then it takes the extra picture, and it's no good. So you won't be able to do any candid shots this way. Absolutely not.
Right.
So try to switch it off. Try it. There is an increased risk of camera shake. Yes, it's definitely there, but the light is so much more beautiful. And in order to counter the camera shake, you could, well, maybe just try to hold the camera steady, maybe lean against something, place
right.
the camera onto something, the back of a chair, a shelf, a table. And this way, maybe even get a more interesting perspective than usual. But obviously, if it's flash or nothing, if it's too dark and you just need that shot, then yeah, just go ahead and use it, of course.
It's, you know, this is a good thing to remember, is that, this is how most cheap cameras are, but you don't have to use it, and you can try not to use it. And when you get a pro camera, then you can get much more flexibility using a shoe camera or a slave. I mean, there's all sorts of ways to do it. Chris Marquardt is the host of Tips from the Top Floor. It's a really useful podcast for not just for beginners. We stick with kind of beginner-y stuff on this show, but he does some very advanced things as well. And you can find out more about it by going to tipsfromthetopfloor.com. While you're there, please note he's got a conference, actually a number of conferences. He's coming to the U.S. His fall 2007 workshops are going to be in Fort Collins in September, and then San Diego, Minneapolis, and Port St. Lucie, Florida. So if you want more information or you want to sign up, these are what, four-day conferences?
Those are 4 days. They span over a weekend, so people don't have to take off more than 2 days, and they're fun. If you go to the website, you can watch a video, listen to some...
you get an idea of what you're going to see.
Comments from participants. Yeah. You get a very good idea of what it's about, and it's a fun thing. Most people want to come back.
Oh, I wish I could go to this. I don't know if I'm going to be able to because I have this thing called a radio show I've got to do. But please, if you can, go find out more at tipsfromthetopfloor.com. And Chris, we'll talk to you next week.
Talk to you.
Let's get back to the phones. What do you say? Line four is Mark in West Virginia. Hi, Mark. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello.
Thanks for hanging on. What can I do for you today?
I was looking into getting a device that recorded video on flash memory.
Yeah.
But I thought, for the same price, why don't I get a DVD recorder? So I was wondering, what would be a good DVD recorder that records to DVDs and flash memory?
They're opposite. You understand that they're almost completely opposite ends of the spectrum. If you record, if you make something on flash memory, if you record video on flash memory, it's for one reason only, because you have a computer and you want to make it quickly, into the computer so you can edit it and then burn it to DVD. If you record a DVD, it's because you don't have a computer and because you just want a DVD. You don't want to go through any intermediate steps. You just want a DVD to play in your DVD player. I do not recommend DVD recorders for people who have computers, because in order to make a DVD that is playable, you have to record at a lower quality at MPEG-2. That's what a DVD requires. Lower quality than DV. You have to put up with the fact that you're recording on these DVD discs and you can't look at the DVD until you finalize it. So it's kind of inaccessible video, except in the camera, until you finalize it. And then you can't record anymore on it. You can only watch it. And the blanks are more expensive. The cameras are bigger and more complex in order to have DVD burners on them. So I only recommend DVD burner cameras for people who don't have a computer, who just say, look, I want to take the video. I want to have it on a DVD in my library. Is that you?
No, it's mostly to replace a VCR. I'm getting tired of the moving parts breaking down.
So you're going to use this camera to record TV?
No, a set-top unit.
Oh, I see. You're looking for a DVD recorder. I'm sorry. I misunderstood you. I thought you were looking for a camcorder. I misunderstood. So you want a television recorder?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Completely misunderstood you. Panasonic makes the best DVD camcorders. DVD recorders. Now I'm doing it. DVD recorders. But I'm not sure if anybody has flash, cards in them. That's an interesting question. If anybody did, it'd probably be Sony, and it'd probably require you to buy one of them stupid magic stick cards that only works in Sony devices. So I'm not sure I would recommend that. But from people I've talked to, Panasonic seems like the best choice. So I would take a look at the Panasonic DVD burners. You're right. For replacing a VCR, that's actually a great choice. In fact, it's like a TiVo. Do you think you want to use a TiVo? Because the other way you can go is get one of the TiVos that record to hard drive, but also have DVD recorders in them. Humax was the first to make these. There are a number of companies now that make these. And I think that's a great way to go. So you get TiVo functionality. You record to a hard drive, or you record to a DVD, or... if you've got shows on your hard drive you want to pull off on DVD, you can do that too. That's a great combination. SanDisk VMate, somebody sending me from the chat room, Ian Boy, is a video memory card recorder. We've seen this before. I'm not sure I would recommend these, to be honest with you. They're not. For one thing, you're going to wear out the video, flash RAM quickly. It's more expensive. Get a DVD burner. I'm not sure recording out of flash is so useful, to be honest with you. But SanDisk does make that VMate. We've seen that before. Kind of a cool idea. Leo Laporte here. More of your calls coming up. I am
the tech guy.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888. Ask Leo's my number. Let's see if we can get through a few more calls before we have to wrap this puppy up for the rest of the week. Jason's in Neosho, Missouri. Hello, Jason.
Hey, Leo.
Neil, how you doing?
I'm wonderful. Thanks for calling.
Hey, I got one thing to say. Chocolate rain.
Chocolate rain. Oh, you know, I made so many enemies. This is a YouTube video that's had over 2.5 million views. I mean, it's amazing, by a 25-year-old graduate student named Tay Zonde. Actually, that's his performing name. That is weird and way too catchy. And my wife has now banned it from the house. She won't let me sing it. She won't let me play it. And I
my wife too.
Yeah, it's something about it. It's a little creepy. And I know if I were to play it right now, I'd probably lose all my listeners. But I probably shouldn't do that. But it's just, you know, you have to see to understand how creepy it is. You have to see the video, and it's not creepy really. I mean, the subject matter and the lyrics are actually quite impressive and quite kind of neat. But there's something about the song that just kind of grows on you. Oh no! Stand back. Here it comes. Oh no! All right, I won't play it. I won't play it. I'm sorry. what can I do for you?
Hey, my brother-in-law lives out in the sticks, and my sister-in-law lives down the hill from him. And my brother-in-law can get high-speed internet.
Yeah.
It's weird. It comes through his phone line. He gets his TV channels and his high-speed internet through his phone line.
Yeah, I mean, that's more and more going to be the case. I was talking earlier about how the phone companies would like to compete with the cable companies by offering video. In fact, that's how DSL started. DSL was originally designed not for data, but to give the phone companies a foot up in the television business.
It's weird because he lives so far out in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, he's just lucky.
I guess the service they're trying to get people out there, yeah. Another alternative.
Is it fiber, do you know, or is it DSL?
It's not that fast.
Okay.
It's probably
a basic form of DSL. And but, so do you want him to share it with your sister? Is that the idea?
He wants to share it with his sister, and she, or with his with her brother, or whatever.
Anyway, somebody else. He wants to share it downhill. So you can do that. How far are the two houses apart?
About 400 yards.
That's a long way, but you can do it. In fact,
really?
you can do Wi-Fi for literally kilometers, but you need to have a special antenna.
Okay. I already told them it might be a couple $100.
Yeah, not much more than that. There are a number of people who make long-distance Wi-Fi antennas, and what you're going to want is a directional antenna. Because if it's that kind of distance, you can't do omnidirectional. You have to get that data going straight down the hill and aim
all
it.
Right.
Basically aim it. So
well,
you're
looking trees too.
Pardon me?
There's a bunch of trees.
Oh. So well, Wi-Fi isn't necessarily line of sight, although because it's such a high frequency, it really technically is kind of line of sight. I mean, obviously, it works through walls, so it can't be really line of sight. But a tree can block it, especially at those long distances. Go to a site called Radio Labs.
Okay.
Radiolabs.com. And they make Wi-Fi antennas. I'd call them, though, and explain what you need to do so they can give you some information. For one thing, you're going to need antennas on both sides, because if you think about it, if you have the high-gain antenna uphill, that'll send the signal down, but it won't necessarily receive the signal better. You're going to need one on the other direction going back up.
All right.
But they'll help you craft it for that distance. And it's not that expensive. I'm looking at one of their directional antennas. It's a high-gain vertical antenna. This is an Omni, which I probably wouldn't use, but that's $99. They have, you're going to want directional is what you're going to want. The antennas are not that expensive. Radio Labs does a very good job of these, and they make a variety of Wi-Fi antennas.
All right, that sounds great. Yeah. Hey, just so you know, I'm listening. I listen to MacBreak Weekly.
Thank
and
you. Obviously, you know about Chocolate Rain because that was the Chocolate Rain episode.
Oh, hey, you need to do a TWIP this week in photography.
Oh, TWIP would be fun. You know, there's a lot of things I would love to add. I do. I right now do a dozen netcasts every week.
Yeah, I know you're crazy.
And there's a lot of shows I like to add. For instance, I love Scott Wilkinson does such a great job with the home theater stuff on this show. I would love to do a home theater netcast. I would love to do a photography podcast. Although I have to say, with Chris Marquardt, I wouldn't want to compete with him. He's doing such a good job with his tips from the top floor.
Yeah. He does educational though. You could do like news.
I could. You know.
I'm a wedding photographer, and I use Nikon D70s. Believe it or not.
That's what, you know what, until I bought this D5 or 5D from Canon, I was a D70 fanatic, and I love the D70.
Yeah, it's awesome.
That's a great camera.
They're great.
But I've been convinced by all my pro friends, and you're a pro, so you could talk me out of it, but I've been convinced by all my pro friends that Canon is the future of digital photography. That's where to go. And if you're going to get...
I'm hearing that a lot, too.
Yeah.
But I've been with Nikon since back when I shot film.
Me, too. Me, too. My Nikon FM was my beloved little comrade. I went everywhere with me.
Yeah.
And
the thing is, I just can't... I don't think it matters that much.
No,
I think
it doesn't.
How you use the camera.
Yeah, I agree with you. That's more important than anything.
All my pro buddies are telling me to switch to Canon, too, but I just can't.
I have spent a lot now on this
too much glass.
5D. I bought two lenses. I'm getting the Canon L lenses, which is their top of the line.
Yeah.
Very expensive
Doesn't
lenses.
Doesn't the L stand for luxury?
I believe it does. It should stand for loot, because that's what they're doing. They're taking everything out of my pocket. But I got the 24-105, which is great for kind of day-to-day, from wide angle to portrait. Probably good for a wedding photographer. But then I wanted something a little longer, so I just bought the 7200, which is very long.
Yes, the 2.8 f-stop.
Isn't that nice?
The image stabilization. Yeah. Awesome.
See
awesome.
What I'm saying? Now, Jason, see?
That's the best one you can get.
I know. So I figure I've got two really prime lenses. I've got a great body.
They're 17 to 50.
That would be probably a better lens. I come from the old school where fixed focus is the way to go. I don't like these zoom lenses, but I guess the zooms are pretty good these days. So,
well, like a wedding photographer,
you have to
like that. Would that like, a wedding photographer be using that 17 to 50?
Yeah,
the 2.8 and then that 17 to 2.8.
Yeah.
So,
Jason, great to talk to you. Do you know about the Fong Light Dome? Gary, I'll talk about that another time. This is another thing a pro photographer told me about, my good friend Kathy Prati, the Prong Light Dome. Fong, Gary Fong. We'll save that for another day. I'm out of time. Good to talk to you, Jason. Good to talk to you all. Will you come back next week? We'll talk again. Leah Laporte, the tech guy. Have a great Geek Week.